The Brad Sessmatt Show, broadcasting live.
I'm Jordan Hamm here on the Brad Sessmatt Show, filling in for the big guy, and we have so much to get to in the next hour. A whole bunch of stuff off the field, a whole bunch of stuff on the field. We have the Mercury in the WNBA Finals, John Gruden out as the Raiders head coach. Kyrie Irving isn't going to be playing for the Brooklyn Nets anytime soon. So much to get to. We will have LaChyna Robinson of ESPN to help break down Mercury versus Sky in the WNBA Finals. Excited to have her on, one of the best in the business when it comes down to breaking down that league. What can the Mercury do to turn the ship around after a tough game one loss? Looked like fatigue was a big factor there. They've been running for quite a bit now and kind of going nonstop. So we'll see what they can do here and try to make this a four-game series, a five-game series, see what they can do to eventually raise the trophy at the end. And of course, we are about, we're 5 weeks into the NFL season. It's put up or shut up time on the field. It's also put up or shut up time in fantasy football. So Michael Fabiano, good friend of the program, will join us, SI senior fantasy analyst, also has a show on Sirius XM Fantasy Dirt. So we're going to talk about who you could potentially trade for, sell low or sell high, buy low. You know, we'll play a little game of that. And then also, so many injuries happened in the last 2 weeks. How do you find value on the waiver wire? Who do you pick up? And what can you do to make sure you're getting the most out of your fantasy lineup? So always fun when Michael Fabiano jumps on, but excited for both of those guests. But like I said, plenty to get to. Let's get to it. Our rundown brought to you by Desert Financial Credit Union. We appreciate their support of not only us, but of Kristen Muir. And if you know Kristen Muir, we've done plenty of stories of her over the years. Back when she was at Marcos Deniza, she set the record for points scored by a girl in a varsity season for varsity football. Also, the first girl to score a point in an AIA state championship. National stories were done about her. We did plenty of stories about her when that was going on a couple of years ago. At the beginning of the year, we reconnected under not the best circumstances. She was in a rollover accident, partially paralyzed. There was a decent chance she was not going to walk again. Very happy to report, almost 9 months later, walking with a cane, killing her physical therapy, doing awesome. But during that process, Desert Financial reached out to us unprompted and just said, "We want to help. We want to do a random act of kindness." So they were able to help support the family, gave Kristen some gifts as well to help with her rehab and everything like that. So they did a great job with that. Now, Desert Financial, Kristen, the Arizona Cardinals are all partnered, giving out Breaking Barriers scholarships. And you can go to desertfinancial.com/scholarships to learn more about that. But there is a Kristen Muir scholar that is going to be awarded here. The deadline is November 1st. So make sure to go to desertfinancial.com/scholarships, go under the student athletes tab, and you can look at all the info and all the criteria there and fill out for a scholarship. And it doesn't have to be a varsity sport, doesn't have to be a school sport. It can be club. It's really wide open in that regard. So very cool of them to do that. Thank you, Desert Financial, for supporting us and supporting Kristen. And to our viewers and listeners, please support Desert Financial. So let's get into it. News of the day today: John Gruden is out as the Las Vegas Raiders head coach. And on Friday, an email came out back in from 2011, where he was talking about he used a racial trope talking about Damaris Smith, the NFLPA president. And then more of these emails came out, and there was homophobic language in it, racist language, misogynistic language. And after that came out, it was a relatively quick process where he resigned. Mark Davis, the owner of the Raiders, accepted that resignation. And this was all when he was an analyst with ESPN, but he was sending emails to then president of the Washington football team, Bruce Allen, and using this sort of language. And this was uncovered in a larger investigation into the Washington football team and what they've been doing. So that's how the Wall Street Journal first reported it on Friday. The New York Times on Monday reported the other emails in there. And I mean, in short, you know, this is something that can't happen if you are a leader in general, if you're just a leader, but especially if you're a leader of a football team and touching on many of those, you know, it's such a diverse place, a football team, and you are using insensitive language towards, you know, many players of that race, or, you know, any gay players, using homophobic language, you know, that sort of thing. The league has gone so far for a push for, you know, equality and, you know, having end racism on, you know, branding around the stadium and, you know, that sort of thing, that it seemed like it was, you know, not a matter of if, but a matter of when those emails came out. So this is something, you know, I feel like this is also just the tip of the iceberg with this story. So I feel like much more is going to be coming out about this as we continue. The other thing is the transparency and how quick this news got out about John Gruden, but the NFL has protected many of these emails within the Washington football team with Daniel Snyder and with, you know, some of the owners, you know, higher ups in that organization. So I've seen a big call for transparency to see those also. You know, if that's going to be uncovered, why not? You know, everything. Again, this is a story I don't think this is going to be continuing, going to, I think, have a lot of ramifications, not within just the Raiders, but also within the NFL as well. So on the basketball front, the Brooklyn Nets have announced Kyrie Irving will not be participating with their team unless he can be a full participant. So he has been very outspoken. He is not vaccinated. In New York, with those state and city guidelines, you need to be vaccinated to play home games, essentially. Yesterday, Steve Nash came out and said, you know, he was asked about it and said, basically, yeah, we're trying to work through all of this, kind of kept it vague. But it almost sounded like we're going to use them when we can. But the team came out today. Sean Marks, GM of the team, came out and said he cannot be a part of this team unless he is a full participant. So what does that mean moving forward for a team that was making a push for the finals and was about a Kevin Durant big toe away from advancing in the playoffs? You remember he hit that very long two, and if it was a three, that was the game, and they were going to advance, and they eventually got knocked out. But you know, this is one of the most talented teams in basketball, and to have your second, third best player not available because of that, they're going to have to figure it out. Is he going to get traded? Are they going to release him? Is he going to eventually get vaccinated so he can play with that team? He also floated the idea of retiring. So not sure where that's going to go with this. This is another story that it's going to be one of those things where you just, this is going to be an ongoing discussion for sure. So, so on the baseball front, though, we have had a great postseason so far with the you know, postseason navigating through all of that. Again, I think it's been such a great idea by MLB the past couple of years to have that extended playoff, have that single play-in game, and in a year, this year, where the Dodgers won well over 100 games, but because the Giants kept pace so well throughout the second half, they had to play a play-in game to get in. But a bunch of these games yesterday, the three of the four series played, one of them was rained out, but it was you know, just a couple of very wild games. You had the Red Sox advance, the Dodgers lost to the Giants. And it was one of those games where the weather was a factor, the wind was playing a huge factor. And, you know, the Dodgers, they love to mash. They love to, you know, have those big innings with crooked numbers and, you know, hard hit balls and that sort of thing. with the Giants obviously playing the pitching defense, and that definitely played into their hand. This is a great stat from Fabian Ardaya of The Athletic, former, we did high school broadcast together a couple years ago on Sports 360 AZ, but he does a great job covering the Dodgers. But this is just a wild stat to me. He tweeted, "Something for the ball didn't carry due to wind part of the night. The Dodgers and Giants combined to hit six balls at least 300 feet with exit velocities of at least 100 miles per hour and an expected batting average of at least 500. Okay, so essentially, you hit it really far, you hit it really hard, you're going to get on base. Five of those six batted balls were outs last night. And that's just like, you know, the phrase, that's why you play the game. That is why, yes, the numbers can give you a great depiction and prediction and all that, but that is why sports are so great. And that's why baseball is so great. You know, to have a night like that where it's just like, yeah, just didn't fall. So a great series there. Obviously, Diamondbacks are looking up in the NL West. I think if they were to have a route to the postseason over the next couple of years, I think a hybrid of the Giants and the Rays, if they can somehow kind of meld that together, bounce back years for some of their veterans. They have a strong farm system. The Rays continually just pump new players in, and then as their contracts grow, you know, they may or may not move on, but they found a great way to have that sustainable kind of ecosystem. And in the AL East, it's very much David and Goliath, but there are essentially three Goliaths. When you think of the Yankees, you think of the Red Sox, and you can throw the Jays in there too. And then the David are the Rays. And then you have the Orioles somewhere over here. But the thing is, all these Goliaths are afraid of the David. Even though the Red Sox just beat them. But they are so good at doing more with less. And I think that's where the Diamondbacks are going to have to go. They have a bunch of talent in those minor leagues. This is going to be kind of the first really big class of guys that can come up together that Mike Hazen and his team have been able to bring in. So if they have hit, which he feels they have, and Hazen usually has a pretty you know, fair assessment of his teams, that could be a route they potentially go. So still a lot to get to here on the Brad Sesmat show. Fantasy football time. Michael Fabiano, nobody better in terms of breaking down the fantasy game. And then after that, we're going to have Lechino Robinson as well. But first, let's talk to Michael Fabiano about all things fantasy football here on the Brad Sesmat show. Welcome back to the Brad Sesmat Show. Jordan Hamm filling in for the big guy. And we are in the middle of football season, which means we always have to check in with our good friend Michael Fabiano, talking all things fantasy football, senior fantasy analyst for Sports Illustrated. Michael, thanks so much for joining us.
Anytime.
So before we get going on fantasy and everything like that, I saw on your Twitter, you're doing a lot of things, various things with charity, your Cameo to support mental health. You're also doing something here with Scott Porter. Can you just tell us what you're doing, you know, off the field to help support some really important charities and foundations?
Yeah. So if you book me on Cameo, the proceeds, all of it goes to supporting mental health awareness, which is, you know, near and dear to me as someone who has dealt with anxiety issues for the last 20 plus years. So it'd be great if you went on there and I can talk about your fantasy matchup, talk trash to somebody, whatever you want. And then working with a good friend of mine, Scott Porter, who is very involved in Huntington's Disease Society of America. His wife actually has a history of that in her family. His mother-in-law has it. And so he's very passionate about it. And you can go to hdsa.org/freeze-hd or hdsa.org/bid. And he has a lot of really great auction items that people can go out and bid on, including a guest appearance on my show on SiriusXM Fantasy Dirt as a fantasy football analyst. So if you think that you know your stuff, maybe you think you know more than I do. Who knows? Maybe you do. I don't know. But you can go on my show and we will bring you on as an analyst and we will get your opinions on matchups, on waiver wire, on player values, You will be our analytical guest. And I think that would be a lot of fun for people out there. So once again, hdsa.org/bid or hdsa.org/freeze-hd.
Awesome stuff there, Michael. Support both of those things, everybody viewing and listening to this. So let's get to the fantasy side of things now. We've seen a lot of injuries this week, the past couple of weeks. I don't know if it was just because we were so focused last year on COVID, but it feels like there's more injuries happening more so than ever this year. Can you remember a time where it just felt like, especially big time fantasy players were, you know, getting nicked up and missing 2 or 3 weeks at a time, and people were really scrambling as much as it seems like people are this year?
Yeah. I find myself, I think, saying that almost every year. Well, wow, there's so many injuries. But this weekend, there was a point during the weekend where I was like, all right, let's just stop the games. It's enough. It's enough. Everybody's getting hurt. You know, like, it's enough already. This week, obviously, was a bit cursed with the injuries, but this is something that the NFL is going to have to deal with, right? They wanted that extra game. And now you're going to see, because this is the biggest season in NFL history, of course, because it's 17 games, what happens late in the year? Yeah. Are we going to see more players than not banged up, injured? We've already started to see some teams who are dialing back on their running back touches, right? Although the Titans aren't doing it with Derrick Henry, that's for sure. But we're seeing more and more committee situations. And I think teams are just trying to keep their top backs healthy or healthier for the stretch run. But yeah, I mean, the Giants, boy, are they snake bit. And I'm a Cowboys fan, so, like, you know, I have no sympathy for the Giants, but that offense, I felt terrible for Daniel Jones, who suffered a really bad concussion. And Fox kept replaying him, getting up and staggering, which I didn't think was cool. But Saquon with the ankle that looked like the alien was coming out the side of it. I mean, that thing was blown up like a balloon. And then Kenny Galladay with the hyperextended knee. They had already had Darius Slayton and Sterling Shepard out. And now you got the Rams this week. Good luck with that game. And Clyde Edwards-Helaire goes down. You know, last week we had David Montgomery go down. So, yeah, there have been a lot of injuries. And I think if fantasy managers need to take one thing out of this, it's that you better be bidding on players. You better be going after guys on the waiver wire who are hot ads, because you're going to need that depth, especially at the running back position, because I don't think these injuries are going to stop. Maybe we're not going to have as many as we did in week 5. But unfortunately, it's the nature of the game. They're going to continue to happen throughout the course of the season. Hopefully, nobody gets injured too significantly, but you can never prepare. You can never prepare enough for that. You have to make sure that you have depth on your fantasy roster. And the way to do that at this point is either make trades or go out on the waiver wire.
Another notable injury back on Thursday, which now feels like 4 years ago, but Russell Wilson, obviously, yeah. Seattle is one where people are drafting a lot of their players and making sure that they have those. A big reason for Russell Wilson, now that it's Geno Smith, how do you see those affecting some of the skill guys, the DK Metcalfs, Tyler Lockett's, Chris Carson's of the world for the Seattle Seahawks?
I mean, exactly. Like, every player in that offense is going to be downgraded, right? I mean, Geno Smith looked pretty good, but let's not get things twisted. He's not Russell Wilson, right? Russell Wilson is a guy who has the respect of defenses. Like, you're not going to be able to stack the line of scrimmage against the run because Russell will pick you apart through the air. And so everybody takes a bit of a downgrade. I'm not telling you that you shouldn't play Tyler Lockett. In fact, I like the matchup this week against Pittsburgh. Same thing with DK Metcalf, right? And it's not like Geno Smith is not a professional quarterback. Like, he'll go out there and get the job done. He's just not going to be able to do the same things that Russell Wilson is able to do through the air with his feet. You know, Geno is a bit mobile, but he's not Russell Wilson. So everybody takes a little bit of a downgrade. That doesn't mean that you're not playing these guys. You just don't have as much confidence in them. The matchup, though, is right, at least for the wide receivers, because Pittsburgh's been very bad against that position so far this season. And that's going to end up being a game where we're going to go to school on Geno a little bit, right? Because this is going to be his first NFL start in a while. It's going to be a full quarters of Geno Smith to see exactly, you know, what he can do. And this is a matchup against the Pittsburgh Steelers that's going to be on national television. It's a Sunday night game. So Geno's in the spotlight.
Speaking of Pittsburgh, it seems like they have a good group of playmakers as well. The offense has been a bit sporadic, and you mentioned defense. They'll probably be throwing the ball a lot with a defense like that. But with Juju going down now, does it help having Chase Claypool, Deontay Johnson? Does that just kind of open things up, one less mouth to feed in a sense of just, you know, getting balls to guys?
You hate to see guys get hurt, and we never want anybody to benefit from someone else going down, but this is fantasy football, right? And so you got to discuss that. And of course, I mean, Juju going down means that there's more targets in the passing game, which means look what Chase Claypool did last week. And I love him against Seattle this week. Yeah, Deontay Johnson's a virtual must start every single week. Najee Harris, I mean, we're starting him every week regardless, but maybe there's a few more targets out of the backfield for him, because Pittsburgh doesn't really have anyone behind that trio. I mean, James Washington is banged up right now. You've got, I believe it's Ray McLeod on the depth chart as well. So you're not going out there and grabbing these guys off the waiver wire and you're thinking, oh, wait, this is a guy that I can potentially use. And Pittsburgh's not that explosive offense in terms of the pass anymore, right? I mean, this is an offense that has really struggled, that they've looked, I mean, honestly, they've looked somewhat broken. Last week against Denver, though, they were better. And so that was a positive. Big Ben actually played really well. For the first time this season, he was actually a pretty good fantasy option. I didn't love the matchup going in, but he ended up putting up a good line. So you're not really going to be leaning on anybody else in Juju's absence. You're going to be leaning on Deontay and Chase Claypool a little bit more maybe than you had in the past, because these guys are now, I think even Chase Claypool is a virtual must start, especially this week against the Seahawks.
We're five full weeks into the NFL season now. It seems like a lot of teams are kind of in that in between of, all right, do I start making trades? Do I start selling if I'm in a keeper league? That sort of thing. The trigger happy teams have already kind of passed with the trades. But 5 weeks in, any guys that you're trying to sell high or buy low if you're trying to make a deal and kind of jumpstart your team a little bit?
Listen, I'm always making trades. I've made probably, I'd say, 6 to 8 trades across my 14 leagues already. And I'm not done, man. Trades are, like, to me, past the draft, it's like the most fun part of fantasy football, making trades, right? So I can certainly tell you that, and some people may disagree with me here, Cordarrelle Patterson is a really good sell high right now. He's been awesome, like awesome. And maybe he does keep this up, but maybe he doesn't. And if you can go out there and get a really valuable piece with a longer resume of statistical success in exchange for Cordarrelle, I would go and do it. I mean, there's no question about that. There are some other players out there that you could probably try and sell high on right now. For example, I would say Dawson Knox. If you have another tight end on your roster that maybe you drafted to be your one, maybe you have Kelsey, maybe you have, for example, Darren Waller, maybe you have TJ Hockenson, maybe you have Mark Andrews, and you grab Dawson Knox off the waiver wire, go out and try to pick a team that needs a tight end and make a trade. Dalton Schultz, same kind of thing. If you've got depth at tight end, he's been amazing, right? And I'm not being a biased Cowboys fan, but he's been great. And so that's another player that you may want to try and sell high on right now. Can these guys keep up this level of production, right? I thought a couple of weeks ago, Mike Williams was a good sell high player because he is one of the elite players based on statistics. And then he had that one bad game where he was overthrown by Justin Herbert, would have had a touchdown. But at that point, his value went down a little bit, but now it's way back up again. So but you have to also make a decision. Is Williams somebody you should keep? Like for me, if somebody offered me Nuke Hopkins for Mike Williams right now, I'm not doing it. I'm not doing it. Mike Williams has been great and Nuke has not been good. And you would think, like, wait a minute, Nuke Hopkins was a second round pick. Mike Williams was drafted as a wide receiver 3 or 4. That's crazy. It is what it is. The Cardinals are spreading the ball around a little bit and Nuke is not putting up great numbers. He had a touchdown last week, but the numbers overall have not been, you know, superior, not been elite. So guys that you may want to buy low on right now, Stephon Diggs comes to mind. He hasn't really put up great numbers yet. I think they're probably coming, but his numbers have not been all that tremendous, you know, at this point in time. So, you know, maybe you try and get him on the cheap at this point. That could be some of TJ Hockenson. Although Hockenson, I'd have to get not cheap because he's an elite tight end or at least close to an elite tight end, but he hasn't been producing, but he's got that knee injury that has me a little bit concerned, but still, he's been getting out there battling through it. So if you can get him on the cheap at a thin position, I think TJ Hockenson could be, you know, worth a roll of the dice, but the price would have to be right for him. And then, you know, at the running back position, you know, at this point, there are some players out there that are starting to really exceed expectations. And I don't know, remember, running backs are a very thin group. That position is very thin. You've got a whole bunch of guys that are really good. And then all of a sudden you've got players who may be, well, startable on a regular basis, but they're in committee situations, like a Chase Edmonds, for example, right? Mm-hmm. Chase Edmonds was the running back 12 going into last week. Did not have a good game this week, you know, dealing with a bit of an injury. James Conner's getting a lot of the goal line work. So, you know, Chase Edmonds could be a guy that maybe you take a shot on now, right? After he had a bad game at a discounted price, he's still going to be the guy who leads that backfield in touches and snaps every week, but his ceiling is a little bit limited. So if you need a flex starter, you know, maybe you go after a guy like Chase Edmonds. But as I mentioned, there are a lot of running backs who are hot right now. They're playing at extremely high level. Kareem Hunt, Austin Eckler, Najee Harris, guys like that. I'm keeping those guys. I am not going to try and trade. I will tell you this. If you can get a king's ransom, and I'm talking about a king's ransom for Derrick Henry, he is on pace to carry the ball like 480 times. Carries, not touches, carries. And I understand the guy is like, people say he's not human. Well, he is. He's just a monster, right?
But so I do. To his knees. Yeah.
I do. Right. Exactly. I've met the man. He's gigantic. Okay. The problem is, like, historically, this is going to be really hard for him to continue to carry the ball 30 times a game, you know? And if he does do it successfully, I tell you one thing, he's going to be the biggest bust candidate in fantasy football in 2022 because the touches, it's so much work. And the Titans, Julio Jones is hurt. AJ Brown's been banged up. The offense has not really been clicking on all cylinders without Arthur Smith. So again, a king's ransom. Mm-hmm. Somebody offered me a whole hell of a lot for Derrick Henry, you know, including a stud running back and a really good wide receiver, for example, or a really good tight end. I'd at least think about it because as great as he is right now, can he keep this up? I don't know. Mm-hmm.
You can keep it up every single year. Every single time I talk to you, you're always giving us great insight. Michael, thank you so much for joining us. Make sure to find Michael on Cameo and also support HDSA. You can be a guest analyst on his SiriusXM show, Fantasy Dirt. So, Michael, thanks so much. Appreciate it each and every week. And we'll see you this time next week as well.
All right. Have a great week. Good luck.
Welcome back to the Brad Sesmat Show. I'm Jordan Hamm. And with the Phoenix Mercury making their finals push down 0-1 to the Chicago Sky, we wanted to have LaChyna Robinson of ESPN join us, women's basketball analyst and podcast host who can be seen throughout the WNBA finals hosting ESPN studio coverage. LaChyna, thank you so much for joining us.
Thanks for having me, Jordan. It's good to be here.
Absolutely. Yeah. So with game one, you know, the Sky were able to flex their muscle a little bit, 91-77. What was your big takeaway from that game as they were able to really kind of separate themselves in the second quarter and then never really look back after that?
Well, first, I think, Jordan, in this matchup, we've got a couple heavyweights, right? We've got two teams that are playing their best basketball. But unfortunately, in game one for the Phoenix Mercury, they ran across a Chicago Sky team that was a little more rested than they were. You know, Phoenix had just played a tough and emotional game five on Friday at Vegas and then had to come home and prepare to play noon Pacific time on Sunday. So that's a tough turnaround, I think, for a team to have to start the finals. But no excuses, as Diana Taurasi would say, though I thought that they were fatigued. You got to credit the Chicago Sky. I mean, James Wade has done a fantastic job with this team over the course of the season. You know, I don't know that their seeding would be what it is coming into the playoffs had they had Candace Parker fully healthy in stretches of the season. But at the end of the day, my biggest takeaway is just that, you know, Phoenix is going to have to find a way defensively to slow down the Chicago Sky balanced offense. They had six players in double figures and just really got their transition game going.
Mm-hmm. You mentioned that, yeah, the six players in double figures, that's tough to defend against. So where would you look to attack to try to get the Sky a little bit off balanced offensively?
Yeah, well, a couple things. You know, I think Chicago was able to pull Brittany Griner out of the paint quite a bit. I mean, Brittany Griner, 6'9", tremendous shot blocker. I think she's led led the WNBA in shot blocking 8 seasons of her career. So they were able to pull her out to the 3-point line a bit. And I believe we may see Phoenix play the number game a little bit defensively. So leave Brittany in the paint and force Chicago to beat you from the outside. See if they can consistently hit those jump shots. The other boost for them is they're expected to get Sophie Cunningham back into the lineup. And she gives them a little bit of a bigger defensive presence at the wing. Kalia Copper, who plays the wing position for Chicago, had an outstanding game. She's had an amazing season, but had 21 points and 10 rebounds in game one of the WNBA finals. So they're hoping that Sophie Cunningham can give them a little bit of a different look defensively. She's tough. So, you know, now that she's healthy, it gives Sandy Brondello some much needed depth as well to help with fatigue, with the injury also to Kia Nurse.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. You mentioned those injuries, obviously, Mercury fatigued and shorthanded in game one, not a great recipe there, but mentioning Cunningham, you mentioned the defensive side, but we've also seen her a couple times throughout these playoffs go off offensively from the outside. How can she help spread things out a little bit on that Mercury offense, especially now with Nurse gone for the year?
Yeah, I mean, you said it, spread things out, right? What we saw from Chicago defensively was a lot of trapping, and it's tough for sometimes smaller guards like a Skylar Diggins-Smith or a Shea Petty to see over the outstretched arms of a trap. So Sophie Cunningham could be more effective there. But you're right with the way she's come off the bench and really gotten hot from long range. I mean, with any type of offensive punch taking pressure off of Phoenix's big three, that'll be helpful, because that was something that Kia Nurse was doing well in the playoffs, was knocking down threes and giving them a toughness on the defensive end. And Sophie likes to mix it up. She plays with a lot of confidence, and I feel like they could use her energy in a game like game one, but good to have her back for game two. Hopefully she can do the same.
Mm-hmm. We've talked a lot about the Mercury having to battle fatigue, and both sides are going to see that after a long season. And then you throw in the COVID adjustment last year and the Olympics. Do you see fatigue being more of a factor this year, more so than other years, because of those other things, other factors coming in?
Absolutely, Jordan. You know, and it's not just physical fatigue, right? Like, people may say, well, there are only some players that played in the Olympics. The other players got a break. Yeah, that's true. But a lot of other players from other teams that didn't go to the Olympics were still in the gym. You know, a long season, you extend the season an extra month. And again, it's the mental fatigue. It's just the wear and tear. Keeping in mind that these women play all year long, when they're done with the WNBA season, they're going to go play overseas. So, you know, their bodies do start to get a little warm, but I think you hit the nail on the head. I think with the delay of the Olympics and all the COVID testing and everything that we've been through as a country, honestly, in the last year and a half has been exhausting for everyone. So you could definitely see some of that coming into play right now in this high intense WNBA finals.
Mm-hmm. Talking to LaChyna Robinson, women's basketball analyst and podcast host. ESPN is the exclusive home to the WNBA playoffs, and game two of the finals will be Wednesday night at 9 p.m. Eastern, 6 p.m. Arizona time. As we look, you know, you look at things on paper, and the first matchup I think that jumps out is Candace Parker against Brittany Griner. And you said that, you know, she was able to kind of bring Griner out of the paint a little bit more here in game one. What do you expect moving forward just between these two and this big time matchup?
Yeah, well, they will match up on some possessions. You know, Azaree Stevens served a lot as the primary defender on Brittany Griner, but I thought that Candace Parker played a tremendous defensive game all the way around. I mean, she drew 3 offensive fouls that I could count, 2 on Diana Taurasi, 1 on Brittany Griner, which is an important aspect of the game, obviously, with those two players for the Mercury. But I expect to see more post-ups from Brittany Griner in this game. You know, I thought that she was floating a little bit on the interior in game one and maybe not posting hard consistently and asking for the ball. Look, there's no one in the world that can guard her when she's playing the way she's been playing in these playoffs. Again, I think she has so much responsibility. So she's probably a little physically and mentally fatigued. She's got to block shots on help. She's got to get out and set screens for her guard. She's got to make great reads out of the double team. She's got to score in one-on-one situations. So Brittany has a lot on her shoulders, but I just believe that she'll have a big game like we've seen her have in these playoffs in game two, with an emphasis on pounding the ball inside, because that also allows Phoenix to slow the pace of the game. And that's where Chicago was able to literally run away with it when they were able to get that pace going.
Mm-hmm. Now in these finals, obviously you have some huge star power and also some great role players, but who's a player or two that you're looking out for here moving forward that could be a real X factor and help turn this series one way or the other?
Yeah, you know, I'm going to have my eyes on Skylar Diggins-Smith here in game two. You know, she had a solid game in game one, but I believe with some of the injuries and the movement on the Mercury roster, she's going to have to do more scoring and take on more of that responsibility. She came out really looking to find her shot in game one and then kind of, you know, disappeared. But again, because Phoenix relies so much on their big three and their starting five, it could be a lot over the course of a game. So, but Skylar's tough mentally, physically, she's relentless. This is her first WNBA finals appearance. She is eager to win that first championship. So she's a player for me that would be an X factor for Phoenix moving forward, in addition to getting Sophie Cunningham back. And then, you know, for the Chicago Sky, Stephanie Dolson had a great game one. She was the player that pulled Brittany Griner out of the paint. You know, at 6'5", can shoot a face-up jumper. She set great screens. If she can continue to really impact the offense in multiple ways, like screening, like stretching with her three-point shot, that's difficult, because you start out with Azrae Stevens and Candace Parker, and you've got your hands full, and then you bring Dolson in off of the bench. I just thought she was tremendous for Chicago. So she would be someone I would keep my eyes on moving forward.
LaChyna, a very exciting series here moving on in the finals. Thanks so much for the time and insight in a very busy time of year for you.
Thanks for having me, Jordan. Appreciate it.
That is LaChyna Robinson, and this is the Brad Sesmat Show.